ahead and start then, knowing that very likely other people will come on the line. But I thought I'd at least get a couple people, you know, wait till we had some. So let me start this. So this is a teleconference on the 23rd of August. And the subject of the teleconference is Pathwork Guide Lecture 249, which is the pain of injustice. And I'm going to work from the handouts that I posted on the my website, and that includes two pages of quotes from the lecture and a worksheet developed by another helper, Rosalie Chamberlain, and a one-page document which has the numerical designator of PC10, which is called Spiritual Principles. So those are the documents I'm going to work from. And what I thought I'd do is talk a bit about the lecture and what it says and relate these three documents together. And then I wanted to see if we could do a very light personal exercise, not that you have to volunteer information, but so that you can consider where the lecture might apply to your life. And then we'll see what questions come up, and then we'll go a bit further into the spiritual principles. So that's my plan. I'd love to invite people to introduce themselves again. And if you have any particular questions, please feel free to offer them at this time. So I think everybody's really kind of curious about where you're located, as well as who you are.
So this is Harry Davis in Marshall, Texas, and I wanted to know if anyone else is getting a clicking in the reception.
I hear a very tiny click, Harry, but it's not very noticeable to me.
Okay.
Hi, this is Wendy from Forbes, Australia. Hi. I'm getting the clicking, and I think it's our neighbour's electric fence, and we've complained about it, but not got anywhere. I have a question about how the personal responsibility relates to all of the spiritual laws. I'd like more clarity on that.
Okay.
Thank you. And I'll mute, so hopefully that clicking will stop.
All right. What you might try, Wendy, is hitting star 6.
Yeah.
And that might mute the clicking, but it might only mute your voice.
Okay, I'll try it.
Let's try that for just 2 seconds. Okay, from what I can tell, Wendy, the clicking has completely stopped. Harry, is that what you hear?
Yes.
Okay, so Wendy, if you could, all you have to do is hit star 6 and I can hear you again. Okay? So anytime you want to say something or ask a question, please feel free. But this does help other people.
Thanks. Well, I'm back, and I'll go back to music.
Beauty. All right, then. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Karina. I'm in Shepparton, Victoria, Australia. Hello, everybody.
Welcome, Karina.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Selena from Singapore. I'm excited to hear you again.
Welcome, Selena. And if you have any particular questions now or at any point, you're certainly welcome to ask.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay, this is Lila from Denver, Colorado. And one question I had from the handout labeled Pain of Injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And under additional materials references is what it says, and there's like 8 items. Each of them start with an E and then a number, and I was trying to understand what those were.
I hate to admit this, but you've got me confused too when you say that there were 8 items.
Yeah, at the top of the page it says references to spiritual laws and pathwork guide lectures, and there's a number of lectures listed. And then towards the bottom of the page, it says additional materials, references, and like E185, Law of Mutuality, O24, Law of Cause and Effect, that kind of thing.
All right. What I'm going to have to do, Lila, is I'm going to have to download that.
Okay.
Because that's not what my copy says, but I believe you absolutely. It is the magic of computers.
Yeah,
my copy is that, too.
Yeah? Okay. I apologize. I have no idea what that reference is.
Because I was wondering, I noticed on your website you mentioned a manual, so I thought, well, maybe this is something to do with the manual or something.
No, on the spiritual principles list, it does say number 48, number 60. It doesn't say TGL.
Uh-huh.
But, like I say, all I can do is download it and explain it to you later and apologize for the confusion that's being created.
Well, that's fine.
Okay. If I did that now, I would go numb, so I just can't do that. I'm sorry. Anyone else on the line? Okay. I will admit that because it's only four or five of you, I desperately want to go to the computer and download it and find out what you're talking about. And maybe I just need to resist that. So I'm just noticing. I'm going to go through the Pain of Injustice lecture because it's very powerful and it's fairly straightforward. Okay? And then I'm going to switch to the spiritual principles for a little bit. And then go back to finding an example in your own life, and then work with the worksheet. So that's the sequence I'm going to use. Just reading down in these two pages, and what I do is I take a 12 or 14-page lecture, and I distill the quotes that seem to carry the primary message that I'm teaching from that lecture. It does not mean that that is complete. It does not mean that that encompasses 100% of the lecture ideas. That's why they're 14 pages and I'm only doing two. But what it does do, it is allows us to focus and not go ripping through 10, 15 pages looking for a quote. So I'm actually trying to narrow the discussion down to a specific theme or a specific concept. So I am leaving out a lot and I do invite you to go read the entire lecture. So what the lecture states is that there are five major types of pain. And the guy doesn't bullet point these, but if you go through and he says, this is the first one, this is the second one, you'll find that there are five that he talks about. The first one is the pain of when someone wounds you, the pain of feeling hurt. The second pain is from confusion, from not understanding what's going on. So it's different to be hurt and know exactly what happened than to be hurt and not be sure what's happening. It's a different kind of pain. The third kind that is talked about is a vague, nagging sense that we have created or co-created the state of pain. In other words, number one, we hurt. Number two, we're not crystal clear about why. And thirdly, we think we may have contributed to it. So these, as you can see, become intermixed. It's not clean what your pain is about. But these are, it's like we're trying to unravel a braided rope and distinguish different types of pain. The fourth kind of pain is the pain of real guilt with no intention to make restitution. And that is not painless. It may look like it for some people when they say forget you and walk off, but humans feel pain when they do that. The fifth pain is what this lecture is about, and that is the pain of injustice. So we're leaving behind the other four types for the moment. and focusing on the pain of injustice. And the pain of injustice can include all these others. But if we take it apart and tease it apart, we're looking at one central theme, one particular flavor of pain. The pain of injustice, that pure thread, comes from the fear that the universe can allow destruction, that there are no safety valves. So when you perceive injustice, what you're seeing is something terrible happened and there's no retribution, there's no cavalry, there's no sheriff that comes in, you know, to arrest the other party. It looks like God doesn't care. It looks like it doesn't matter that an injustice was done. And the pain there is about the fear that this may be how we have to live, never knowing whether something can be redressed, never knowing if there's anything we can do, never knowing if we're going to get assistance on either a human level or a cosmic level when something is done that isn't fully deserved. So it's fear of a meaningless universe, of chaos, which is the result of disconnection. Somebody's not watching. And it also creates disconnection. So even if somebody was watching, they're not doing anything. So we feel disconnected. What the guide talks about next is that there is a profound relief that can result from doing some work with this. And the specific work that they're talking about here is overcoming resistance. I'll explain that in a moment. Facing our own lower self traits. And facing the consequences of the effects of what happened. In other words, instead of running away and pretending it doesn't happen, or justifying, or getting angry, or demanding revenge or retribution, of taking a very, very good look at what exactly is going on. So again, there is a profound relief that can result from working with these incidences rather than judging them or reacting from them or going numb. Because when you look at a specific situation, you may then be able to see that life is really just and fair. Now, there's a problem with this, though. I'll get to that in a second. The converse is also true. When you try to get away with something, when you perpetrate an injustice upon someone and no one catches you and you think you got away with it, what does that mean? That means that there is no God, there is no justice, nobody's going to catch you, and if they don't catch you, they won't catch somebody else. So it doesn't matter whether you are treated unjustly by someone else or you treat someone else unjustly. We have this horrible feeling that there are no controls in the universe, that anyone, including us, can do anything we please. And to some degree, like children, children want structure. They want to know that their parents are present. They want to know that society is present. They want to know what the rules are. And they certainly want those rules to be available to them when injustice happens to them. And even if they protest, eventually, children appreciate the fact that there are rules to govern their behavior so that you have a balance when you interact with others. So in the beginning, we may resist the rules as it applies to us. But ultimately, as we grow up, we learn to appreciate that if we want to be treated justly, we must treat others in the same way. Without that structure, without those rules, without any consequences, life is a mess. It's nice to have an example of this. the example that I use is of a large parking lot. So early in the morning, late at night, in the shopping malls, when there are no cars in the parking lot, if you drive diagonally through the parking lot, my sense is it's a little unnerving, especially if there's just a few cars left, because I know I'm supposed to go up and down the lanes as marked. And if I am going diagonally through the parking lot, somebody else could be doing the same thing. And at that point, I have no idea which direction they're coming from. They may not be looking for me, and I don't know where to look for them. So that's a very tiny, mundane example of chaos in normal life. Now, that does not mean that you can't drive on the streets appropriately and get hit, but the reason for all the lanes and traffic lights and roundabouts is so that you have a general idea where people are coming from, and you have a general expectation of what should happen so that you can monitor for certain things that might go wrong, but also anticipate other people cooperating with the flow of traffic. So imagine, if you would, the streets with no traffic laws at all. What would it be like to drive? The result is we'd be driving pretty slowly because we'd never know what was coming next. Or we'd drive fast and crash, and who can you complain to? There are no rules. Very mundane, sometimes very helpful. Again, if you have any questions, jump in. There are two problems or two pieces of two places where people argue is what I've just said. One is on the rules, and that's where the spiritual principles come in. But the second is about resistance. So the guide at that point talks about resistance in the lecture. The guide says that there is a great resistance around seeing that negative patterns lead to negative experiences. That we kind of like to wish that even if we do something mean, it will not result in meanness coming back to us. So we would like the world to be magical. We would like to do what we please and get good in return. But the reality is, if you put out negative energy, there's a very good chance that you're going to get negative energy back. And the lecture that talks about this is Lecture 201, Demagnetizing Negative Force Fields. And the tagline on that lecture is The Pain of Real Guilt. So there's resistance to really getting that if we are having a negative experience, we may be creating or co-creating that negativity. The second kind of resistance comes to an overall resistance to acknowledge the law of cause and effect. And the lecture that goes in depth about this is Lecture 196, which is Commitment, Cause, and Effect. And it talks about two different subjects that are actually quite related. So the title is Commitment, Cause, and Effect. So we are resistant to this because what it means is that if we do something, the effect will show up the energy that was really in what we did. That you can't get away with anything. Again, we'd like to magically think that even though we're rude, we don't want to suffer the consequences that our rudeness might create. The third aspect of resistance is that the pain of injustice is eliminated when we see the connections between cause and effect. Why do we resist that? Because it means that we have to be good. We don't want to be good. We want to do what we please. So we're actually resistant to spiritual law, because what that means is there's a standard and we need to meet it. Now, the second aspect of resistance is in justification. And what that's about is human beings tend to want to see cause and effect occur in a time period of their own choosing. And what that looks like is, I will believe in cause and effect if that person gets punished while I'm looking at them. But I don't want to accept that the cause that they did something mean, and there will be an effect, but I won't get to enjoy watching it happen to them. So I want to enjoy watching the meeting out of spiritual justice. I want it to happen so that I see cause and effect for the other person. However, the cause and effect with me, I'd like to be split up. I'd like a really long timeline on that. So if I do something mean, I would appreciate if God would give me 20 years before I have to do anything about that. So it's both a justification and a demand, and it's also a way to try to squeak out of it. The problem here is that, number one, human understanding itself is limited, and we resist that. We resist the possibility that cause and effect always occurs, that karma, which is the cosmic accounting system that started with the beginning of time and will go on until the end of time, is always fair and always balanced, but we don't get it. We don't see it. The third thing that we resist, besides our, we resist not being able to see it right there and then. We resist the fact that it may be happening and we don't get it. And the third thing we resist is that it may happen outside our lifetime. That's very, very difficult for humans to accept, that souls live on. They were living before they incarnated here on the planet, and they'll live on afterwards. And that cosmic justice and karma may spread out in both directions. So, in a joke version, if someone kills someone, we believe that they should be punished in this lifetime. But karma is going to, I'm using the word punish as a shorthand, karma is going to punish that person. That person's going to have to pay for what they did. But because of their particular spiritual journey, their journey may be accelerated by their thinking that they got away with it. So karma may actually allow them to think they got away with it. That doesn't mean they did. That doesn't mean that they're not going to pay. Another way that can look like is if somebody robs a bank and they take $10,000 and they spend the rest of their life wondering whether the knock at the door is going to be the police. An average citizen might say, but they never got arrested, they never went to jail. But karmically, that person has lost their freedom. Sometimes in a more profound way than you could ever take their freedom away by locking them up in jail. They won't be able to participate in society. They won't be able to allow their names to be attached to things. They can't get their picture taken. We've all heard newspaper stories where somebody gets their picture taken and the next thing they get arrested because they were actually wanted for something. And they had forgotten to be careful. And they had gotten their name in the paper or their picture in the paper. And the next thing they know, the authorities are on their doorstep. So karma may take a completely different view of how effect is going to come back to this person. And that timeline may not feel satisfying to us. On the other hand, if the timeline is long, we may think we've gotten away with something. But that can't happen either. So I don't think the guide uses karma specifically in this lecture. They may. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a cosmic bean counting system where no act goes unnoticed. And that is said in the lecture. No act, no thought, no feeling goes unnoticed and unaccounted for. So what we've got here is we've got the five types of pain described, and then when we focus on the pain of injustice, we're talking about a pain that comes from a fear of chaos, a fear of the creation of disconnection, resistance to actually working with cause and effect, and that this is the strongest pain in the human soul. And then in resistance, we're resisting the fact that we may have put out negative energy and it's going to come back to us. We resist cause and effect as being ironclad. And we also resist, although this is a little backwards, we want things to happen so that we get it, as if we are the arbiter of cosmic justice. Are there any questions yet? Okay. So, how do you do the work? How do you look at this? Because it's a teleconference, because it's being recorded, because it's very difficult, it's a little tricky to see energy, and the intention is not for people to be overly revealing, what I thought I'd do is just suggest a way for you all to work with it in your own minds, and then see what questions come up. You are certainly welcome to talk about specific circumstances, but I'm not making that a requirement. So, if you've come to a teleconference on the pain of injustice, the chances are you've experienced it, that there's some resonance for this title, this topic for you. So I'd like you to consider an injustice. But I need for this injustice to not be conceptual. So in other words, we really can't take an injustice where Tommy murdered Sally and never went to jail, because it's too far from our personal experience. So I'm going to ask you to find a place where you have experienced injustice that is very personal. And it's very possible that that's going to mean that it's small. Now, there are no small things, but it may sound small. Just like an example of driving diagonally across the parking lot may sound banal or mundane, but if you think about it, it does reflect a common experience of chaos that most people can have. So when you think about injustice, please don't be afraid to think about a small incident such as cutting someone off in traffic or being cut off in traffic, because these are not small things. They're very important. But make sure it's something for which you have personal experience and that you care about, so it's not an arbitrary intellectual argument. So presuming that you'll come up with that, take that experience of injustice and, using the phrase that I adore, scrupulous honesty, look for a moment and see where you may have contributed, even in the tiniest way possible, to that situation. In other words, the phrase used in the lectures is a grain of sand, a grain of truth. Look at the situation that you've named and see if there is the tiniest grain of truth of negativity that you contributed to the situation. Even if the other person contributed a mountain, let that go for the moment. And see if you can find your grain of truth. Now, I'm presuming that you have either found it or you're looking for it. And my challenge to you is this. Understanding that we're just imagining this and there's six or seven people on the line, consider what would have happened in that situation or what can happen when that situation recurs. If you change your attitude in some way, change your perception of what might have happened, change any negative energy that you were allowing to move out because they misstepped first. In other words, I grant that they may have done something wrong or unfair, but you may have done something unfair in return. Consider that you neutralize your reactive negative energy. And the last thing I'd like you to consider is that you consider having a different expectation than you may have had in the situation, or if it's a pattern that you tend to have. And by that I mean that when somebody shoves us, maybe we want an apology. And we want that person to say, I'm sorry, I shoved you. And because they don't, we have an attitude, and we get angry, and we feel justified in our anger because we got shoved and we did not get an apology. A change of expectation would mean that you no longer demand reciprocation when something unpleasant happens to you. So I'm going to repeat this in a short form, but I wanted to explain it a little bit. So taking a piece of injustice that you felt that has happened, recurs regularly, or will likely happen again. See where you may have contributed to the negativity of that event. And consider what would happen if you changed your attitude, your perception, the energy that you put out, or your demand or expectation of what the other person should have done.
Jan?
Yes.
I've been fighting with the cutting out of different words in your presentation there, and I thought if I'd wait long enough, I'd be able to fill in the blanks. I don't know if anyone else is having that problem with reception or not.
Okay, what did you miss, Harry?
Beg your pardon?
What did you miss?
Well, that number, I'll try to summarize that last on an instance of injustice that one experienced that might recur. And now the second step on that, I didn't get it because it cut about half of it out.
Okay. The first thing I talked about was attitude. The second thing that I talked about was your perception. And by that I mean that when something happens, you interpret what happens.
Interpret.
Make a story up.
Okay, that's a word that cut out just then.
Okay. I wonder if my puzz or, you know, the electronics go out.
No, everything. I hear everything clearly.
Okay.
So am I.
So I'm using the word perception as in perceive.
Right.
And I'm letting that stand as shorthand for making up a story or a case about what happened. So we have attitudes about things, but we also have our favorite stories. So when somebody cuts me off in traffic, my story is they saw me and they didn't care. That's my story. Okay? Does that make sense, Harry?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. So as I'm listening to you, and the wheels are spinning in my head here, and so here's something I want to run past you. So in childhood, you know, we have the various things that occur that lead us to feel injustice. You know, our parents have done things, there was injustice because they were never, you know, held accountable for it. Mm-hmm. So does that not, given everything else we know about the pathwork, does that not cause at least our perception of injustices throughout our life because we have that expectation that life won't be fair?
Right.
Okay.
So depending on the flavor of injustice, because all parents are unfair.
Yeah.
They are all working to a formula that they never fully explained to us. So you just can't figure out what's making somebody, what their thinking process is. When they make their values and they enforce their standards, they're just not automatons. They're not computers. They enforce some and don't enforce others. And this is based upon their personality, their distortions, and their life story. You put two of them together, and you get a nice mixture of injustice. And yes, that sets you up for the rest of your life.
Because we have that false belief or that false image that, you know, whether it's reality or not, we're putting on the situation. Because I know for me, that's, you know, at that busy time, like, well, yeah, I thought that was one of my false images, was that life is unfair. And
mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it's intended to be that way.
Yeah.
So from a spiritual standpoint, the idiocy of human life is deliberate. The craziness of human life is exactly the pot we're meant to stew in. All children hit injustice at some point. All children find that authority is not perfect. And they either react against it. So in the lecture, The God Image, the guide postulates two tracks. One is that you perceive authority as harsh, and the other is that you perceive authority as benign. But nobody goes through life never butting up against authority. It doesn't happen. It's a little easier to handle when you're 2 than when you're 30. Because if you have gone through life until you're 30 years old thinking you can do what you please, your comeuppance is going to be harsh. You will have not developed the tools to handle the frustration that will occur at that time. Basically, you're spoiled. So either way, you're going to come up against authority. The question is when. And then, of course, because you're not a blank slate, because you're a spirit who's come here with a task, your reaction is not pure. You will react according to what is already within you. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to mention something, I'm happy to work with it. Again, you can keep it as bland or as simple as you want. The key element will probably be there. Or perhaps we can move on and everybody's kind of gotten that picture. And I hear no votes for what to do, so I get to do anything I want. Okay. What I wanted to do was just involve you on a thinking level. And if you had any questions, that would be fine. So what I want to do now is I want to move temporarily into the spiritual principles. So when we talk about the pain of injustice, we're talking about a gut-level terror that there are no rules. So then the solution, of course, is here's the rules. It's one page. Here you go. Just, you know, here are your 9 commandments. All you have to do is live by this, and you'll be fine. Well, that doesn't exactly solve the problem. So for those of you who have this form, I invite you to look through it. But I don't presume that you have the paperwork in front of you, so I'm just going to read off the laws, because there's only 9 of them. And they have bullet lines. They have a simple version, and then they have a few lecture quotes that explain it perhaps more in detail. If anyone does not understand the principle, please speak up, because it's not that hard to do a little explanation. But I'm going to read off the nine. And I would like you to take the example that you looked at, or a new one. It doesn't matter. And in the way that I joke about things, which makes things a little lighter, a little easier, a little quicker, what I advise you look for when you read down the list of spiritual principles and wonder where your problem is to look for a spiritual principle that you react against. Now, it may look like you're reacting towards it, saying, this is the principle I believe in, and if this operated, I'd be fine. That's actually a reaction. It's actually a demand that you see that cause and effect on a daily basis, because you don't truly believe that it's operational. That makes sense? So in other words, if you're not neutral about it, saying, yeah, I understand, do not murder, got that. But these principles are more refined than that. They're not as simplistic as the Ten Commandments in the Christian Bible, or the Quran, or the Torah. They're a little bit more subtle, and they demand a little bit more cooperation and latitude. And because it demands more cooperation and more latitude, that our resistance will show up more to these principles than they will to thou shalt not steal or thou shalt not kill. So, let me start this. The first principle is the law of self-responsibility. Now, there's a question asked in the beginning about self-responsibility. Okay, so I'm going to explain this one just a little bit because somebody's already asked a question. Okay, the law of self-responsibility says in no uncertain terms, you create your own reality. That comes from Pathwork Guide Lecture 40. You create your own reality. That does not mean that you can create a pink sky instead of a blue one. What that means is that if you want to be miserable, you will create misery. And if you want to create happiness, you will create it. So the resistance that comes up is, I can't do that. There are miserable people around me. Well, what the guide is saying is, pack your bags and move. Get up and walk out the door. Change your job. Change your marriage. Change your attitude. So that the next time somebody comes in and gives you a terrible story and, oh, I'm miserable, and complains, you simply say, I don't want to hear that anymore. And either you need to leave the room or I need to leave the room. And if you do that and you enforce it, you change your reality. Because even if that person flaunts off and says, rude, you're just plain rude and I don't like you anyway, at least they're not talking to you anymore. So you actually have a lot more control over your reality than most people take responsibility for. We actually like to think that we're victims. We actually like injustice. Because if there is injustice, then it's not our fault. So that's what the principle of self, the law of self-responsibility speaks to. Once again, please ask questions as I go. Second principle, the law of paying the price. Now, this is everyone's favorite. Okay? Everyone loves paying for what they get, right? And what that means is that if you want a relationship, you need to pay for it. And what that means is you need to invest in that relationship. Does not mean buy it. It means pay for it. It means earn it. It means show up, pay attention, learn to communicate. Speak up for yourself and do not let the other person step on you. It means building a relationship according to the standards that you want to hold within a relationship. And that's what the law of paying the price means. law of cause and effect is what we've been talking about. The law of cause and effect says whether you see it or you don't see it, every effect had a cause. And every cause will have an effect. And you may not see the full magnitude of it in the moment that it gets triggered. But that doesn't mean it's not there. It may mean that it will come back to you slowly, like Chinese water torture over time. Principle four is the law of living in truth. And what that's about is that you need to face life. That living in ignorance will create disharmony in your life. Living in ignorance and not attempting to face the truth of your reality and your life will invite ignorance. It will invite a muddling of cause and effect so that you can't see the results of your own actions. And what happens when you can't... Imagine a world... I'm going to back up a second. I had this wonderful documentary on diseases that take away pain. Now, you'd think that what's the problem with that? I mean, disease, no pain, that shouldn't be harmful. The problem is that pain is a warning signal. Pain is the body's way of saying, please don't do that. So right now I'm sitting cross-legged, and I have one foot tucked under me. Over a period of 15 or 20 minutes, my foot will start to hurt. And it starts to hurt because in that position, I'm shutting down the blood supply, and I'm twisting the joint, and I'm not getting sufficient blood supply. If I did not have the warning signal of that pain, I could literally sit on my leg so long that I would kill the cells in my foot. And in an extreme case, I might have to have amputated because I sat cross-legged for too long. Pain is a message that we need to receive. So when we talk about the law of living in truth and facing life, what we're talking about is receiving the feedback from our lives of what works and what does not work. And if we do not receive the feedback, because there is feedback, if we do not receive it, then we have no way to adjust. And it would just like being blind and trying to drive a car. Okay, it can't be done. You need the feedback loop of visual because you're not walking, you're not touching, you're not able to sense, you're going too fast, and you're using a mechanical device. The only feedback method thing you've got when you drive a car is the road feel and your ability to perceive objects as they come up in front of you. Without that feedback loop, you cannot drive a car without having an accident. When I was 12 years old, I was crazy enough, I was trying to think of a polite word, I was riding my bike down a street one day, and I got the bright idea, I wonder how people who are blind would ride a bike. I'm not kidding. And I closed my eyes. Now, there was a ditch to my right, and there were posts along the road so that cars wouldn't fall in the ditch. And I closed my eyes for a few seconds, and then I opened them, and I saw my bike hit the post, come to a complete dead stop, and flip into the ditch. And I figured out that blind people should not ride bicycles down hills with ditches on one side. It doesn't work. And then a nice lady stopped in her car and fished me out of the ditch. That's about facing life. I know that's hysterical, but I did things like that when I was a kid, so there you go. Okay, next one. Principle, law of brotherhood. The law of brotherhood is the golden rule of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but it goes a step further. The law of brotherhood dictates that the way you treat other people comes from how the truth of how you treat yourself. And the truth of how you treat yourself comes from how you treat others. The law of brotherhood says that if you treat any person with disrespect, then you have disrespect in your auric field and you have disrespect in your life. And the fact that you focalize the disrespect onto one particular person doesn't salvage the situation. So utilizing the law of brotherhood, if you hate yourself, you cannot help but hate me. You're just not displaying that. And if you hate me, you cannot love yourself. Because the feelings you have towards your brother are the feelings that are coming out of you. And they will circle around because of the law of unity and come back to you. Law of transformation of negativity. And I'm going to read this because it's a little complicated. The strength with which your divinity can penetrate the ego structure and manifest depends on the degree evil has been transformed through your evolutionary development. So the law of transformation of negativity means that if you have evil in you and you have not dealt with it, then it will manifest. And if you have dealt with your own evil, that will also manifest. In other words, your goodness will manifest or your evil will manifest. So it's a quid pro quo. It's a giant, massive balance beam, justice scale. Law of lack of awareness is a little bit like my riding my bike and closing my eyes. It will get me in trouble. Okay? You need to be aware. Closing your eyes does not make something go away. Refusing to see something does not make it disappear. Law of consciousness reflects experience, means that my attitude towards something will create it. Now, you probably are already noticing that these, they're all the same. I'm describing different points on a sphere, and they all interrelate. So cause and effect, and consciousness reflects experience, and lack of awareness, and transformation of negativity, it's all the same. These are just different words, which is why they stopped at 9 and said, just go et cetera, after that. Because if you get the 9, you get it all. But we do like to have different flavors expressed to us. I'm noticing the clock right now, and I have to split this tape into two pieces. So I'm going to hit *6 for just a second and create a moment of silence so that my audio thing will pick up the silence and tell me where to break it. So if you'll just let me pause for a second and let me do this.